extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, Chuck D in the building. It's Thursday, and I forgot about Tom Bogert when I put out the pre-show tweet. But Tom, it wasn't personal, man. I just didn't look at the schedule. I'm excited to have you here, Mr. Scoops in the building. Don't take offense, okay? I love New Jersey. I might live in New Jersey one day.
No, it's a classic. I thank you for giving me the nobody believes in us argument that all the MLS clubs love to have. So nobody believes in us. It's just adversity. We have, you know, nobody believes in us outside of this locker room. Let's move forward and prove everybody wrong.
Exactly. By the way, there's no David Goss today for a very, very important reason. I think Mowage is happening today for Mr. David Goss. I could be wrong. It might be tomorrow. It might be Saturday. Anders, do you know? Does anybody out there know?
Like covering your bases there.
Yeah, well, like we're really, you know, we're spreading the possibilities quite thick over the entirety of the weekend. But what I do know is that when we return on Tuesday, David Goss will have a ring on his finger. He'll be a married man. So at Empire Goss is the Twitter handle. Send him well wishes. He will probably hate that. He'll probably be very frustrated with me for making this the lead of this show. And he's like, why would you do that to me? Now I'm getting my like notifications blown up. But he and I have seen each other develop from idiots in a lot of different ways to now idiots that somebody has decided that they're willing to tether their entire life to. So congratulations to Dave and Megan. We love you. We're so excited for you. And whichever day that this happens over the weekend, we're very happy for you. So, all right. Any well wishes for Dave? Charlie, you got any like nuggets of wisdom to put out there?
They're an awesome couple. I wish them all the best. I look forward to celebrating with them. They're doing it right. That's all I know. So I know they're going to have a good weekend in New York and do it big. We miss you.
What do you think, Tom?
I'd just like to say thank you for getting married at this time so I could step in for a couple shows on MLS Today in here. So, David Goss, feel free to take some time off whenever you want. Congratulations on getting married. even if you need a day off, just let me know.
Yeah, evacuate. You know what? You go take time for you, Dave. Like anytime you need a mental health day, whatever it is, Tommy Scoops will be there waiting for you. All right, coming up today from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, the best thing we saw in Week 28, which was basically like a full week midweek. We've got some clips from my interview with one Greg Berhalter. I think you might know him. Went to Chicago with Anders on Monday. We sat down with Greg for an hour in Soccer House, and I believe that they may have already evacuated, moved out of Soccer House already. And if you don't know what Soccer House is, it's sort of this iconic place near the lakeshore in Chicago, that U.S. Soccer has been headquartered since, I want to say, 1991. Ahead of the 94 World Cup, they were looking for a new place to go. And there were a bunch of cities that put in bids. And Chicago was not going to be the city they went to until Mayor Daley in Chicago went to U.S. Soccer and said, hey, how do I make this happen? And they said, well, we really like this house. It'd be like a good location for us to be. And he said, give me a second. Got the job done. And since then, U.S. Soccer has been based, headquartered out of Soccer House. The soccer history is just like falling out of the place. You know, you walk in, it truly is an old house. It has, you know, you have basement vaults full of newspaper clips from 94. You have jerseys from all the different World Cups hanging around. You have trophies just like sitting on shelves. It was extremely special to go there to get a final tour of it before U.S. Soccer moves out into new digs and just sort of absorb all the history therein and get to talk to Greg Berhalter. We have two clips today that we will tease from that interview. The first one is on Sergiño Dest's future, which looks to be with AC Milan, and on Christian Pulisic's future, which looks to be with Chelsea for the time being, maybe against his wishes. The second clip, all about number nines. God knows that's all we want to talk about with the U.S. national team at any given time. Well, they're all in form, it seems like now, but you can't bring everybody, not to September and certainly not to Qatar. So we will hear from Greg, who he's watching, what he's thinking, how many guys are going to be in that September camp. Just a hint for you, it's not going to be as many as you might want it to be. So we'll try to sort through who gets left home and what it all means for the national team going forward. Let's start with the best thing we saw in week 28. Since you're the guest, Tom, I'm going to give you the honors, man. What's the best thing you saw on this Wednesday night as we all experienced whiplash trying to consume MLS?
Yeah, I think that there was like 9 games on at once, like 9 of the 11 were kind of overlapping. It was difficult, it was fun. And every time you looked up at Nashville, Vancouver, it was Hany Mukhtar celebrating. This dude is an absolute superstar and a hat trick last night. He's got 19 goals and 11 assists. That's 30 goal contributions. And for me, he just moved up to number one on my MVP ballot.
Number one. You said 4-1 win for Nashville at home. This was the home form that we needed. Now, we had argued like, hey, somebody else has got to step up. And I don't know that anybody but me thought that Jacob Schaffelberg was going to be the guy that steps up, baby, goal machine. But ultimately, it comes back down to Hany, Charlie. And Tom says number one in his book. Sebastian Drewsi scored last night. He's still the golden boot leader with 20. But Hany's at 19 and 11. And I want to test you guys real quick. He is the 15th player, Hany Mukhtar, with multiple 10-goal, 10-assist seasons in MLS. The 15th. There's 14 others to go double-double twice. 19 and 11 is a stupid season. It is not yet over for Hany Mukhtar. Who are the other players who went 10 and 10 in multiple seasons in MLS? Can you name them?
Just Robbie Keane.
Start throwing out names.
Landon Donovan.
Landon Donovan's one. Keane's another. Two. We have two.
Okay. Thierry Henry.
Thierry Henry. 2012 and 2014. That
Man,
is three.
I'm good.
Carlos Vela?
Carlos Vela. We're getting the obvious ones knocked off here. That's four. There's some I know you're not going to get, but there are some obvious ones that I think that you should get. Keep going with the obvious ones. Who's the top, like,
Jaime
who won
Moreno?
A bunch of MVP awards?
Yeah, Jaime
who?
Moreno.
Jaime's five.
Steve
yep.
Ralston?
No, Ralston is not on this list because the
Brad
goals.
Davis?
Brad Davis not on this list either because of the goals.
I would have thought he would have had like minimum like 10.
You got five out of you got 5 out of 14 because obviously we have Hany, so we technically have 6. Keep going with the obvious ones. Multiple MVP seasons. Likes yoga. Is an old man but doesn't chops has a chop has a vintage chop.
Preki.
Trying to hand this one to you. Putting it on a silver platter. Yeah.
Preki.
So we got Preki. Let's see. Legend in the Rose City.
Oh, Valeri.
Yeah, Diego Valeri. Yep. Ignacio Piatti, not on this list. No, but a legend.
Jovinko,
yes, I was going to say a legend in Canada is on this list. How about a guy who doesn't care what Portland thinks about anything?
Yep.
Catches lunkers and got
Clint
his
Dempsey?
First. Yeah, got his first hole in one here, I think, last week. And Clint Dempsey is on this list. A longtime MLS head coach. Preki. Team is the star.
Ignacio Piatti. Nacho Piatti. Oh,
struggling, man.
Here at the riot, the battle has begun.
Jason Christ. If you went with the it's a fact in life that you lose more than you win, that would have been
okay.
It for
gotcha.
Me.
Okay, got you. Metro Stars, hailing from Central America.
Oh, Juan Pabloano? No, it's South America.
No, Central America. Central America. He's an MVP as well. Amado Guevara on this list as well. And then the two,
I might have been 3 years old at that
time. Yeah, yeah. Jeff Cunningham is here as well. And then I think the two you probably wouldn't have got would be Diego Serna and Ronald Cerritos. Those were more early days MLS. But, yeah, Amado Guevara. Yeah, we established that. Got that. Good stuff, Charlie. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah, Hany Mukhtar.
Chad late. So, Hany Mukhtar, Charlie, is he number one in your mind on MVP? If I gave you your ballot right now and I said you have to vote. All right, Charlie, I ask again. Hany Mukhtar. Has he moved into the number one spot in your MVP consideration on your ballot if you were filing today, or is it still Golden Boot leader Sebastian Drewsi?
It would be close. Hany Mukhtar is gaining ground, but because Austin is second in the West and Nashville is fifth in the West, I still got to go with Drewsi. 20 goals and 7 assists. He is the success for Austin. And I think Nashville have a better overall team. But because Drewsi has been driving Austin forward, I think for me, that's who my MVP vote is going to at the moment. That's not to say that Hany Mukhtar can't get there. If Nashville continue to win off of Hany Mukhtar's performances and they keep climbing the table, Hany can jump Drewsi.
I want to say I just absolutely loved, enjoyed, cherished Dax McCarty coming up to the podium last night. His first line was, I'm sure most of you guys are sitting here wondering, why is Dax in this press conference right now? It doesn't make any sense. And honestly, I'm going to be very brief. And then he wasn't brief at all. Then he did, like, you know, it was like, I don't know if anybody else was a high school debater, but he came out and did like the 1AC, like, I'm going to lay the whole thing out for you. This is why Hani Mukhtar is MVP. And if you haven't seen these quotes, I suggest you go to Ben Wright's Twitter feed, at Ben Wright, does great coverage at Speedway Soccer of Nashville and has this all written out for you. But he basically took everybody through the whole thing, and he was like, look, we couldn't do it without this guy. He may not, in the history of MLS, have the same international pedigree as guys like Thierry or Jovinko or some of the other guys, Robbie Keane, some of the guys we listed in the 10 and 10 multiple seasons list. But what he's doing for our team right now, we would be boned without him. Our upside is Hani Mukhtar, and that can be scary for Nashville, but it's also just absolutely incredible to see what Hani has accomplished after what was kind of a, you know, a little bit of a disappointing first year in MLS as he adapted. David Gostherum, shout out, and then just absolutely exploded the last 2 years. Right now, I think I would be split between the two of you, but I would have a hard time with both guys looking at my ballot and saying, I don't have Hani or I don't have Driussi on top. So for me, it's going to come down to these last five, six, whatever it is, games. Whoever has the bigger impact on where their team ends up in the last five or six games, to me, that's who will get my MVP vote. And right now, I think it's a two-horse race, Tom.
You know what the best part about this and the fact that it's coming down to Hani and Driussi? Over Nashville's last five games, two of which are against Austin FC. This Saturday,
let's go.
And then Saturday, September 17th, home and home, we get the two MVP candidates in the last couple games of the season battling against each other. That is
MVP
perfect
matchup. Let's
love it.
Go.
Oh, this is perfect for the propaganda machine, as Dax yeah. McCarty said. I was like, Dax, you don't have to say propaganda machine. Is what was that means? The propaganda machine starts churning out all the favorite candidates and highlights and all the things around the players around the league do well. Dax, we are the propaganda machine, man. You can just say extra time. It's okay. You can call us out. We're here to. We accept that feedback from you. We know you. We love you. Here's a question before we move on to other best things we saw in week 28. Actually, we'll save that for the mailbag. Charlie, what's the best thing you saw in week 28?
Ricky Pooch, LA Galaxy, with a golazo. This is a stunner. And we talked about the impact that Ricky Pooch could have in MLS and for the Galaxy. Yes, he's small. But man, can the kid ball. So I mean, that for me was the stroke of death. LA Galaxy to go on a road trip to New England and to TFC to come away with 4 points is absolutely massive. When you're looking at the table in the Western Conference, they're at 38 points. They needed this performance. They needed to get results on this road trip, and they did just that because of Ricky Pooch. So talk about a signing who comes in to make an immediate impact. Bingo.
If you haven't, I don't know if you feel this, Tom, but what's happening here, and I could feel it from the very first second Charlie opened his mouth and chose Ricky Pooch, was it's like, you know, it's like when you sort of rotate, you're like the off man and you rotate to the basket, but you see like LeBron coming straight down your gullet, and you see him sort of gather the ball, and you're like, oh God, he is about to absolutely dunk on my head. And he's been, I told you so. What did I say when he arrived? You guys said, oh, MVP. Like, I said, no, he has that potential. And then you like see the rims rattling, and you know, you've got nether regions shaking around in your face. Yeah.
That's what just happened. I had to come down with that alley-oop and just
we just got dunked on.
Bang on you.
This is fair, because I think I was the loudest and yelling back at you for this. So it's unfortunate. Now I'm mad that Goss is out and I had to be back around for this. And it was a good basketball analogy, because anybody watching along on YouTube, Charlie was holding up the form with the follow-through. He knew that was money from the second it left his fingers.
Yeah, he was hanging on the rim. He was doing the thing where like swings under and then smiles at you on the way down and then runs down the court. Can I ask you, though, Tom, is a huge draw for Toronto FC. A beautiful goal by Douglas Costa as well, who we've sort of dumped on this year, but an incredible free kick from him. The rumors came out and then they became reports, and then you're tweeting about it, so it's validated. You know, you tweeted, source can confirm Barcelona, yes, that Barcelona, are indeed interested in LA Galaxy and Mexico International. Julian Araujo, as Fab Romano already had said, one of a couple options for Barcelona. Barcelona have made contact with the Galaxy, would be a difficult one to get done. We'll see. Okay, explain, man. Walk us through what exactly that means.
So, yeah, it was tied to U.S. International Sergiño Dest, who it was kind of up in the air whether he was going to leave or not. And then it was kind of breaking yesterday that he was going to join AC Milan after some reports of Villarreal. So Barcelona needed another right back. And again, Julian Araujo was one of their options. The way that it seemed to come out, phrasing the way that it was explained to me, it seemed like Julian Araujo maybe wasn't their top choice. And that has come to pass today. They are reportedly, or maybe it's announced by this time, signing Hector Bellerin. So again, Julian Araujo was an option. That is legitimate. I know that they have been tracking him for a long time because of his exploits with the youth national teams, and he was starting in MLS at 17 or 18. So this wasn't like a panic thing. This is somebody that they had on their radar, made some contact with the Galaxy. Obviously, the Galaxy wouldn't want to really sell right now given the state of the season and not being able to bring in a replacement. But yeah, Barcelona did make contact with the Galaxy. As I was saying, this would be a difficult and complicated one to get through. And this is I have no expertise on Barcelona's financial situation and the FIFA Fair Play rules and the La Liga salary cap. So I don't even know how it would work and what it would have made sense for the Galaxy to even accept at this stage. So again, it makes a lot of sense that it didn't come through. But again, a lot of cold water there. But in the end, it was true that Barcelona did contact the Galaxy about Julian Araujo.
There you go. There's the truth. You also know the truth as it pertains to what Julian wants from his own career from listening to this very show. We had a good chat with him at the All-Star game, and he doesn't seem to be too interested in Liga MX as his next step. He wants to go to Europe, so this had to be a good start for him, some legitimate interest or at least someone reaching out to sort of pursue his dreams in the long run. We'll see what his future holds. Before I get to my best thing in Week 28, it occurs to me that we have Tom Bogert on the show, and we should probably ask you more about transfers before we get too deep. Staying on this sort of topic with Toronto LA Galaxy, Gilles Marshall-Ruddy, is he maybe moving on here? Club Bruges, they're just raiding the MLS pantry over and over and over again?
Yeah, so Gilles Marshall-Ruddy is somebody that Club Bruges are interested in a lot. They had some talks. They had some contacts at the end. No deal is going to get done, particularly right now. And again, given his age, Gilles is 18 years old or whatever. He was injured for a bit of the season and hasn't kind of broken back into the team. That no deal is expected or going to happen. There are other clubs across Europe that are interested in him. Gilles was trained with Liverpool and Arsenal over the winter. Like, he's a really, really big talent. I think we were talking about him a lot in the preseason or coming into the season when it looked like he was going to be the starting right back, as he was for a few games before he got injured. So this kid's a huge talent, one of the biggest coming out of the Canadian national team. Again, he was in the senior team. I forget if he's debuted or not. But yeah, Club Bruges are a team that are interested in him. They already signed Tejan Buchanan. They had a deal for Diego Rossi before that fell through over personal terms. They had bids rejected for Gianluca Busio and Brian Reynolds and Brendan Aaronson. So this is a team and a scouting network that clearly, maybe, you know, focusing on MLS might be a little bit overselling it, but it's quite clear that they have somebody watching, that they respect the league and the talents coming out of it and see maybe either a market inefficiency or at least strong enough value to continue to come back to MLS.
What else didn't get done?
Oh, a lot of things.
Because we're sitting here on September 1st, and things are trickling through still. But what didn't get done?
Yeah, I thought that one of the leads for this one would be Ismael Kone, but it's coming out. Fabrizio Romano just reported that Sheffield United are closing in on finalizing the signing of Kone from Montreal. He was earlier this summer. Norwich City had a deal agreed, but they couldn't get the personal terms for Kone. So that's another championship club that's there. But again, for moves that didn't happen, Kai Wagner was, I had him at the beginning of the summer in the category with like Tati Castellanos and Adam Buxa. Like, yeah, much more likely than not that he's going to be gone. There was a lot of interest. Leeds United, amongst others, in Germany. Jesse Marsh really liked him, but they kind of, no offer was ever made to the Philadelphia Union. No official offer from any team, Leeds or anyone else. So that deal's not going to get done. The Union get to keep their, you know, best 11 top left back in the league for this push for Shield and Cup. Kai Wagner gets a chance to go for a trophy again, and then they'll reassess in the winter. But it has been a few years, or at least 18 months of, okay, Kai Wagner might go the next window. Okay, Kai Wagner might go in the next window. So I guess when push comes to shove, we'll see if any bids come in and bids that are big enough for the Union to accept. A couple other guys, I'll be a little bit more brief. Christian Caceres Jr., there were numerous offers that the New York Red Bulls turned down. The final one, I was told, was around $3 million plus a sell-on percentage. I don't know what team, but these are European teams. Caceres has been with the Red Bulls for 4 years in the first team now. He's Venezuelan international. He's ready to kind of be moved on. And again, there's no surprise that there's been interest in a player that's been so key for this team. Same thing for Jose Cifuentes, Ecuador international. Brighton were interested. No deal is expected to get done today. But, you know, that's another one that I'd be really shocked if in the winter that nothing happens there.
All right. September 1st. That is the deadline. But hey, free agents for MLS could still keep moving in. We'll talk more about that later on in the show. There's a couple other nuggets to get to. Here's my best thing I saw in week 28. We go out to Sandy, Utah. Did you guys see this? Did you see the didn't see it on the forecast, but there were showers, teddy bear showers.
Yeah, it was so cool.
At RSL. Awesome. On Kick Childhood Cancer night for Real Salt Lake with a big 3-0 win against Minnesota United. Kick Childhood Cancer Month is starting. And before I get into all the details there that everybody should know about and how you can support and what this can do, it's some wonderful things. A 3-0 win for RSL, but just the visuals, man. I grew up going to indoor soccer. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have been to indoor soccer games, but I have the hat trick.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody has, maybe it was like early 90s and 80s that it really happened, but everybody has their special hat that they've written on the inside, their name and their address and stuff. And you just, it showers the field. And it was always this formative moment for me as a kid. When a hat trick happened, you start having the horn go off in the arena and everybody starts chucking their hats and the whole field is covered. And as a kid, I was like, but how do they get their hats back? And you find out, and this felt a little bit like that. I mean, literally teddy bears raining down on Cordova. After he scores this goal, he's celebrating with them. And then you know where those teddy bears go. Those teddy bears go to kids who are fighting cancer, who need any and all comfort they can possibly get. And I think it was one of those special sort of weird but awesome moments in MLS and our soccer culture that it feels like, hey, that can only happen here. Like, you just don't see a teddy bear shower happening in other places around the world, around games. And Charlie, I thought that was by far the best thing that I saw in week 28. And I know that that strikes you in a really personal way as well.
It does. I've always appreciated the RSL supporters. I mean, they always bring it, always. And the fact that they care about their community so much and bigger issues in the world. I remember they supported me when I was in the hospital with all the nines, just quality people. And you know, that touches me when I see things like that, because it's bigger than the game. And they care, they think about it. And so that's special. It always touches me deep. And there's nothing more, I think, closer to – there's nothing that moves me more than seeing fans come through together to have that type of impact.
And by the way, you know, that's the sort of off-the-field, like, community angle of this. But the competitive angle for RSL is they slapped one of the best teams in the league – one of the teams in the best form in the entire league, in Minnesota United, 3-0 at home, a win that they absolutely needed in the playoff race, which keeps mm-hmm. them above the line on 42 points and gives them a little breathing room away from the LA Galaxy as well as the possibility to work their way into a home game, which we know how much that would mean in Sandy, that advantage that they have later in the playoffs. So it's a huge result too. The Venezuelan connection here between Cordova and Savarino, I thought Cordova... I was doubtful. I'm not going to lie. I thought Cordova was just kind of like an Augsburg throw-in. Like, hey, we have the same ownership now. Like, you need a player. Like, cool. But he has settled, and it took a little bit of time.
A lot of time.
Gotten into form, and he's dangerous. And Savarino coming back was another one that's like, I don't know, man. Like, feels a little retready, but he has immediately impacted them. And, you know,
and
here they
Anderson
are.
Anderson Julio off the bench. Like, you know, you have – a super sub, someone who can change the game, who can change the dynamic of the team. I just like how this RSL team is playing with straight heart every game. That is a minimum. And then you throw in the quality, execution. This RSL team has really started to develop that culture around Mastroeni. And I don't think Pablo Mastroeni is getting talked about enough in terms of really galvanizing this group and making sure that they are tough to play against. He's gotten the most out of all the players. I mean, when you talk about Brody as a left back, he's literally been able to lock people down. He's so impactful, getting up and down the touchline.
Michael Chang has had an incredible season.
Just
Waffleson,
Miram getting
just the, absolutely, I mean, Miram.
So I can't say enough of what Pablo Mastroeni has done with this group and just how he's been able to reinvent some of these players. Zach McMath. I mean, this was a goalie that if you saw him in goal, you're like, okay, we're going to score three today. At minimum, we're going to have at least two goals with Zach McMath in the goal. Not only we're just going to bang on him, but he'll probably have a couple of mistakes. Zach McMath, not this year. He is locked in. He's not making those mistakes. So, he's getting clean sheets. He's got the communication with his back line. I mean, he's taken a bounds and leaps forward as a goalkeeper and has earned respect. He put some respect on his name. So I love to see that when players have struggled for a long time and, you know, there's a wrap around them. Mm-hmm. Like when you see Zach McMath, you're like, yeah, okay, we're going to get some goals today. Redefining who you are with hard work and with concentration and focus. I love to see when a player gets through all of that, when they're rock bottom, but they don't give up. That's Zach McMath right now. So big shout out to Zach McMath and what he's been able to do this year.
And he was supposed to be the backup. Like this was supposed to be David Ochoa's team. David Ochoa was supposed to have his little heel turn, start turn last year. And even going back to last year, you know, sometimes like we're being complimentary when we talk about this team and like X dog and the mentality and everything like that. Sometimes it comes off as a little dismissive as like, yeah, they're just trying harder. Maybe they're not actually better or whatever. Or maybe, you know, Pablo isn't a great tactician because, you know, he's just got them trying hard. Like RSL were what he did last year was an insane job under the circumstances. Freddy Juarez leaving mid-season, the ownership stuff, not having much money, like the front office being kind of hand-tied as ownership was changing hands to not really do a ton of work. Like the way that they got to the playoffs and made that run was incredible. And you look back at like last year's air quote vibes teams, it was RSL and it was Vancouver who had a great run, Colorado who were at top again with these are teams that you think have, you know, either less money or less talent or whatever you want to call it. Again, I hope that doesn't sound dismissive, but look at where those other two teams are. Vancouver have fallen out of the playoff race, Colorado out of the playoff race and really kind of bottoming out. Real Salt Lake, without, I think I was going into the season, Vancouver and Colorado were looked at ahead of this Real Salt Lake team. Real Salt Lake has done it again. And what they're doing with Pablo Mascherini and off the field, all of these sellouts, like this crowd, no Demir Krylak. He's been one of the most underrated best players around the league. And he's played like 100 minutes or 200 minutes, whatever it is. Like they didn't, Jefferson Savarino didn't come until deadline day in the primary window. Anderson Julio, same thing. Like all these guys that, a lot of key signings.
Oviedo, I think, as well is an underrated signing. I think he could end up being someone who could have an impact. And Jasper Lofelson, I'll throw that in, Bogart. He's come in, and this was an outside back in college. He's playing central midfield for RSL.
At a very high level.
Who in the hell would have saw that? And there's, if you're talking about a coach who can develop a midfielder, who knows a midfielder, Pablo Mascherini, there's not a better coach for Jasper Lofelson to, one, see that ability and talent and to convert him into a central midfielder. So, yeah, I mean, I feel really good that we're giving props to RSL because they have earned it.
And me too.
They've been knocking on the door of Extra Time for a long time. And we're just like putting them off. Tom, you were spot on. It's like, no, they're outworking. Yeah,
X-Dog, that's all I got.
Lightly. No, actually, they got quality. Scott Caldwell out of New England. He said, no, I'm not a homegrown that just, you know, is part of the team. No, I can play still. And so, shout out to Scotty Caldwell as well.
It's a great story. Minnesota just 0.3 XG in this game. Now, there is an explanation for some of this. We got to give that context. It's a great win for RSL at home, but Amaria doesn't start. Reynoso doesn't start. Ludd doesn't start. When those guys don't start, I mean, you're talking about the crux from an attacking side of this team. So, it looks like Minnesota, like, looking ahead a little bit, saying, let's try to grind one out here. They weren't able to do so. Just some information for you on Kick Childhood Cancer Month. I'm rocking last year's jersey, I think. But there's going to be, obviously, those warm-up tops worn by players. You'll see the gold ball all around the league. You will see a gold corner flags, goal nets, captain's armbands, gold ribbon jersey patches, etc. Pro referees are going to wear wristbands with the Kick Childhood Cancer ribbon. Go to MLSsoccer.com/MLSworks for more. As always, this campaign is benefiting the Children's Oncology Group. It's the world's largest organization devoted exclusively to childhood and adolescent cancer research. Use the hashtag KickChildhoodCancer. Tag our old friends at Continental Tire. They're the ones who are matching up to $50,000 in donations on this one. Shout out to Continental Tire. Always a deep, visceral connection with Extra Time, even though AT&T 5G are people.
Thanks for the tires.
At this time. And there's also a really cool campaign. Did you get tires?
I have continental time.
Oh, okay.
I didn't get them set. I'm just saying. Shout out to the quality time.
Okay. We need to get more sounds on this show. We need producer honors to be able to just drop in some that line right there. Charlie saying thanks for the tires.
I wanted. I needed tires. I just had to buy tires.
This Christmas, Continental. I'm thanking them now.
Just ahead of time. Got you.
Yeah, ahead of time.
New thing this year, as part of the campaign, MLS and Continental are going to partner with MLS clubs. They're going to do surprise and delight moments with pediatric cancer patients and healthcare providers. So, going to give them unique experiences, act of kindness, go spend time with them, and give some custom pajama bottoms that are going to be distributed all over the country to pediatric cancer patients. So. Yeah, it's great stuff.
Saying surprise and delight, like surprise knocking your door. Here's four.
I mean, that could be part of it. I don't know. I don't personally know. Yeah, it's like, well, did you need all season tires? We got four of them right here. Where do you want us to plop them down?
Here's your 20.
Okay, let's dig into more of the midweek action here. Orlando City 3, Seattle Sounders 2. You can go to Instant Replay presented by Cheez-It on YouTube or MLSsoccer.com, where we explain to you why exactly that goal that was called offside in stoppage time by Orlando City was reversed and was onside and was the winner. Andre says, no, you can skip this game. But no, we're not going to skip this game. The Sounders, man, this might be it. 15 losses now. That is a record for the Sounders in a regular season, and they have 6 games left. That is a jarring stat. So is this
jarring
stat. Sounders from Jeremiah Oshan, who is a must follow. Sounders are now 6-13-3 in 1-goal games. So when the margins get close, the margins don't go the Sounders' way. They've lost 2 games they led by 2 goals, which this game was one of them, something they hadn't done since 09. And really not their year, says Jeremiah, including some of the VAR decisions. But as I said, this was a correct VAR decision. Is it done, Charlie? Is this it?
Now, we all know better than to rule the Seattle Sounders out. However, if I'm looking right now at 33 points,
6 points out, games,
28 games played, so they still have a game in hand on Portland, so they'd be 3 points if they won their next game. Now, they're home against Houston and home against Austin, away at Vancouver. Those are the next 3 games. They need to take, at a minimum, 6 points. 7 points is probably ideal, but I think at a minimum, 6. I'm not ready to write off the Sounders. I'm not. But I will tell you, they have not played well. The formation for me is why. Tactically, they're not being set up to their strength.
What would you change?
I wouldn't play with 3 in the back. I wouldn't play 5 in the back when they're defensively with Madronda and Roldan as the wing backs. Go back to your 4-2-3-1. That's the Sounders at their best. That when they're at their peak. Obviously, they don't have João Paulo as that orchestrator protecting the back four, and someone who gets around the pitch and is a great distributor. But for me, this is not it. They will not be in the playoffs if they continue to play with this formation. They will not be in the playoffs. So this is where it comes down to coaching. We're talking about the Sounders having all this depth. Well, Schmetzer is going to be put to the test because this team is good enough to get into the playoffs. The only thing that will prevent them from getting the playoffs is getting the tactics wrong. That's the difference. Right now, if you're looking at this team, you have everyone who's available at the moment. If you get the tactics right and you're a little bit more aggressive, and you give a better base, have Rui Diaz as your lone striker, Jordan Morris playing on the wing, not as a second striker, this will be the key for the Sounders. Mark my words, if they change the system, they will get in the playoffs. If they don't, they will not be in the playoffs.
I don't know, though. They got found out with new who teams kind of figured out, just gave him the entire flank and said, all right, like, make the final pass or make the final decision, and it wasn't happening. So do you bench Nuhu, even though he's one of the kind of the best defensive fullbacks in the league? Or, like, how do you kind of solve that? Because some of those games are pretty listless, where there's clip after clip after clip of the ball coming to Nuhu with a billion yards of space and then just nothing coming of the attack.
Well, if I'm Seattle Sounders, he's not my left back. He's either playing left center back or he's off the pitch.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was asking. So then you'd have Madronda back there.
That's what it comes down to is Do you think he's a good partner with Jaromir? Or if he's not, then he's on the bench. Sure. Because he's not a outside back that's going to get you assists. He's not an outside back that's going to get you goals. He gets caught out of position. He relies too much on his pace. Because there are some players in this league that are so athletically gifted that when they're caught out of position, they're able to get back in time. But against the better teams and at the later stages of the year, when a lot of teams are in form, it's not good enough. And against the better teams, especially when you need results, you can't take that gamble and you can't take those risks. So for Nuhu, it's either you play left center back, and that's going to be on Schmetzer to make that decision. Is it Jackson Reagan? Are you going to stick with the youth and say, okay, we're going to go with Reagan and Jaromir? Are we going to say, no, actually, Nuhu, at the beginning of the year or last season, he showed some quality at left center back. We're going to go with Jaromir and him, and then we're going to go with that 4-2-3-1. Here we go, and let's ride it out, because right now this team is just not – it just looks off in the attack, in the transition moments.
Orlando, though, don't look off. You kind of joked about, Charlie, how we've struggled with RSL a little bit this season and kind of been one note on them. I have admittedly struggled with Orlando all season long. They have felt to me just like, you know, what do they do particularly well? Well, I don't really know. Like, what do they do particularly badly? Like, there was none of that either. It was just sort of like, well, this is just it's kind of mediocre. And then all of a sudden, sort of out of nowhere, in a sense, because they hadn't shown like a bunch of signs of great form coming, you have four straight wins at New York, at Charlotte, home against New York City, home against Seattle. There have been some late heroics, you know, Tesho, and then obviously this own goal off Jackson Reagan. Like, there's something to be said for a little bit of good fortune there at the end of games. But all of a sudden, a team that hadn't won in five, had one win in nine, had just been plodding along, struggling in basically every single way other than the Open Cup, is solidly in the Eastern Conference playoff field. New York City's falling, flirting with perhaps even having a home game, and certainly having a home game next week against Sacramento Republic in an Open Cup final with an opportunity to win their first piece of silverware. Tom, what is going on with the Lions? Like, I don't... By the way, we're going to talk to Oscar Pareja and Todd Donovan on Tuesday's show. I think we'll release it Tuesday, so we'll have interviews for you then about Open Cup. But I guess they're just kind of holding on for dear life, and right now it's, you know, staying in the south.
What I like is that they decide to if the game's tied going into stoppage time, they just score a game winner. I think other teams should adopt this strategy that if the game is tied, they should score at the end. No, I mean, you kind of wrapped it up. This is like RSL East. They were very inconsistent, but like you said, what do they do good, really well on a consistent basis? What do they do really poorly on a consistent basis? It was a lot of this not knowing what to expect from this team. So I think it makes sense in that kind of framing that, yeah, some of these goals are coming at the end where it's a little bit difficult to rely on that. Like, if Vancouver Whitecaps, that stopped happening for them and they fell out of the playoff race. Orlando are better than that, obviously, but I think it fits within their character arc that they're getting these stoppage time winners, and it's like, all right, that seems like an act of randomness, but I don't know. They have Facundo Torres has looked a lot better lately, yeah. And Cesar Araujo has been one of the best signings in the offseason. He's really, really good.
Yeah, I would just add, I mean, I watched the game against the Revs. I called it.
But I hope they absolutely watched
blown
it.
Out at home 3-0. I said this team is washed. They are done. There's no way that they can bounce back, considering that the matches that they the next four matches you're playing at Red Bulls. I was like, oh, that's the next match. Chalk that up as an L. Then you had away at Charlotte, so two back-to-back road matches, which they were able to get 6 points from. Then New York City FC, that's a whole nother discussion that we'll get into with Nick Cushing, because he should be on the hot seat already, because he has not done a good job managing this team. Because with all the quality that they have, they should be competing for the top spot with Philly, and that just has not been the case. I know you lose Tati Castellanos, but you had so many players, you have so many attacking players that you felt like we could get rid of Tati and still be competitive.
I thought we were doing this down the line, Charlie.
I know, I am.
Okay,
but what I'm saying is, Orlando how they've turned it on has been remarkable, but they still have away at Philly, Atlanta and TFC at home, away at New York City again, away at Miami, and the Crew. That is not an easy schedule. So for them to have picked up those four straight wins is massive. I would go on to say that guaranteed them a playoff spot.
Yeah, probably.
These four matches.
They got a 7-point gap here. Odds were not with them. And not only did it probably – well, let's not go all the way to guaranteed or guaranteed or however you want to phrase it, the playoffs, but it definitely gave them the exact right kind of momentum leading into what is ultimately – you know, look, playoffs are what they are. Got to get there, and then you'll see what happens. The biggest opportunity in club history with the final at home. It is a huge opportunity for them to win a cup at home, to qualify for the CONCACAF Champions League, and to keep rolling on. Now, I just want to throw out there a 2222 presented by Body Armor teaser. Apparently, this is what Anders says, and I trust Anders in all things, that Cesar Araujo was number one on somebody's list. He has been extremely good. I'm not sure he's been that good. But that's a little nugget for you. I got to do my votes, so I'll address that.
I don't want to be splitting hairs and just after on the back of me saying that Cesar Araujo was one of the best signings of the offseason. Like, you're out of your mind if you're putting him ahead of Jesus Ferreira and Gaga Sonina and Thiago Almada, like all these guys. Again, like
Cucho?
I'm the 2222. Like, again, I think I had him at ninth. Again, he's been really awesome. And, like, I hate that I have to be on the other side of saying, like, he's not number one, but, like, that is quite the take.
We'll see how that 2222 list shakes out. We were going to do our ideal playoff field, but we'll save that
Thank
for a
God.
Different day. How about this, though? Let's get out. I know you didn't like that idea. I got it. I understand, Tom. I do this for you. This is a gift for you. Let's get out our shovels, though, and start digging holes. Get it down to 6 feet. Don't know who we're going to stick in them because there's no lines through anybody
Ominous.
Just yet, even though the Union did qualify for the playoffs. Who we putting in the ground?
Atlanta.
Atlanta's done
yep.
for you.
Yeah.
Even though they're only 3 points
yep.
out.
Yep. Dig
yep.
it deep.
Colorado.
Well, it's 6. The standard is 6 feet. Colorado.
I'll tell you why Atlanta. Because the goalkeeping is so poor.
Hmm.
You have to have a goalkeeper who can keep you in matches. Very poor. Not only decision making, but just the quality. So I think for me that is. That's the sign.
All right, you buried the Rapids.
I'm just going to add a nugget on Atlanta. They could have signed Josh Cohen, who is currently playing in the Champions League group stage with Maccabi Haifa. That they could have had him signed him for free, and they didn't. They ended up going with Rios Novo and Gudinho, and Gudinho hasn't gotten a chance yet. So, yeah, that's been difficult to watch. And, yeah, Colorado, I don't know. There's not too much to say after you lose 6-0 and then 4-1, pretty listless when, you know, your season's on the line in those couple games. They're 7 points below the line now. And, again, that's probably not as fun. That's pretty obvious. So I'll give you another one if you want. I would say the Vancouver Whitecaps as well.
Wow, and they're only 5 points out. What's your logic?
Absolutely listless. That game against Nashville, it was kind of reminded me of the Chicago loss when they were up 2-0 against Columbus. That kind of extended the losing streak. I know that they steadied the ship just a little bit, but I thought from that moment their season was done. This one, Vancouver, that was a must win. That was at least must show up. So I don't know how you recover from that. Also, Andres Cubas played for Paraguay in a non-windowed friendly. I don't have any clue why that was allowed. I mean, I don't know. I assume Vancouver had an option, and I'm sure he wanted to play. So maybe they were trying to assuage a player and do what he wants. But, like, if you're actually in a playoff race, you can't let arguably your most important player go play a friendly outside of an international window.
Two wins.
Can we all agree on DC?
No.
DC and Charlotte. Yeah, I mean they're like they're laying in the hole. They're like testing out the fit. You know, they've already been they've been down there. They're like, yeah, we got the leg room here. We're gonna be nice and comfortable for the off season down here. I completely agree there. Chicago, I would put in that same boat.
Those are obvious.
As well. Yeah, and then under Colorado, obviously Houston, Kansas City, and San Jose are done. Now the thing for Vancouver, I will say. They have 2 wins and 14 on the road, and their next 2 games are road games against San Jose and Colorado. If they want their season to go down to the wire and be alive on decision day and maybe even above the line, they need to probably get 6 points from those games. And then they have 3 home games on the bounce and then at Minnesota to end the season. But those are winnable away games, and they're going to have to do it if they want a chance at this. Okay, other big matches here. This is our time to debate. Look, how many minutes are we in? Like 45 minutes in, we haven't even talked to LAFC or Philly. So for all those people that say that it's LAFC or nothing, like, always leads the show,
always the best team.
Yeah, 45 minutes. Like, yeah, let's see. Here we are right now. LAFC losing 2-1 in Houston. Not a good one for them. Three straight losses. They weren't happy about a number of things, their own performance included, but also the referees. Again, Charlie and I, we agreed. We didn't think that Elias Sanchez handball was didn't love that call. Didn't love that call. But in the end, LAFC had a ton of chances, and they didn't convert. Shout out to Steve Clark, who was out here just, you know, like, absolutely denying Gareth Bale, who was just taking aim there for a while and also taking sitters away from Chicho Arango. Yeah, so we have a chance hit us up. Said, are LAFC actually in trouble, or do you think they will turn it around and be fine by the time playoffs hit? Because obviously they're already qualified for the playoffs. So, Charlie, are they in trouble?
I don't think they're in trouble, no. But what I do think is that that mystique of LAFC being unbeatable and having the best players, and it's going to be such a challenge that we have to have the best game of our lives to compete, that's gone. I think they are beatable. And so for teams approaching LAFC, there's that excitement to take down the Giants, and that it's very doable if we stick to our game plan. So I think it's just – it's going to make it that much more difficult, because now there's a real belief that they're not as good as you think they are, or as good as they are on paper.
Did they overstretch a little bit, Tom, from your perspective? Because they were just railroading teams with, like, the team that they had. And we've all praised them, and I have as well. I'm like, hey, other teams are on the league. Like, get ambitious, just like LAFC. And they got stupid ambitious, like crazy ambitious. You know, the talent that they have on that field is unreal, but maybe the chemistry and just the transition aspect of it mid-season, that's going to be naturally difficult to hit those same levels. Did they overstretch?
I don't know if I'd go that far. Again, I was kind of back and forth on this last night in the moment where you said, okay, like this is a team that was leading the Supporters Shield race. And again, they weren't like completely dominant like that 2019 team was. But again, they were really, really good, best in the league. And then you think of, all right, like maybe that upset the balance. Maybe you got too cute around the outside. But like I've come back around to, they didn't get rid of anybody for Bale and Chiellini for the most part. Like they waived Daniil Henry. And like Mamadou Fall was pretty much was likely to go regardless. So I don't think that you can kind of directly blame those signings for how it goes. Cause again, Ismail Djourdjian had been hurt. He was moved out. Danny Muskovsky was moved out, and he was, you know, wasn't a key starter for this team. So it's not like the opportunity cost was getting rid of key players or whatever. So I don't really know how to explain it. It's really, really concerning. Like, again, not to do too much recency bias, but like Philly might've moved above them in like, rather than it being tier one LAFC, tier two Philly, and then everybody else, like they're absolutely in the same tier. And like I'm in for the argument of Philly being the favorite right now, because they don't have any question marks. You look down the stretch, they know who they are. A lot of this team has been together for a few years. Like that back line and goalkeeper has been together for years. The midfield too. The attack is new, but they kind of did that bedding in period over the first half of the season. And now they're absolutely flying, obviously. And you look at LAFC, there's so many questions around them. What's your best front three? What's the best way to use Gareth Bale? Can Bale and Vela play together for long stretches of time, or do they do too much similar? Chicho Arango, is he your starting center forward, or does it have to be Bale if you want to play with Bale and Vela? Like, there's all these questions. And how do you get Denny Bouanga to be up to fitness? What happens when Christian Teo comes? That's a lot to deal with.
Who's your center back?
Chiellini still hasn't played more than 76 minutes. He's been here for 2 months. I don't understand. Like, it's, you know, Matt Miazga's coming here after not playing for 6 months, and he's already given you 76 minutes and looking really good. So,
do you remember all the LAFC people chirping like crazy about Chiellini, how he's gonna come in here and just dominate and play every game? I said, what world do these people think that Chiellini could come in here and play and dictate LAFC's back line from the get-go? Yeah, he's a great person, great teammate, has had an amazing experience, but it's a rigorous schedule, and it's not easy for any foreigner, no matter the age, to come in and adjust and play. Then you throw in a center back who is well over the standard age of players that come over and has dealt with a lot of injuries in the past. It was never going to be easy, but there were a lot of LAFC people chirping a lot, saying, hey, he's going to come in and dominate. Look at him. No, it's not. And there's going to be
The Eddie Segura, by the way, on the center back side, the Eddie Segura exit with injury, and I don't know how serious that is. I hope it's not very serious, knowing his history of injuries recently. He might be their most important.
Yeah, and again, it's just I like you said, Charlie. Right, it wasn't going to happen instantaneously. But we're 2 months here, and he was training with the team for at least a week before even the window opened or whatever it was. Like, it's concerning that it's 2 months in and he's not either being trusted or can't play the 90 minutes. And same with Gareth Bale. It took him just about the same amount of time to get his first start. And it, like, I guess you back these players to, I guess, figure it out. And again, they have time. I think that LAFC aren't as concerned with the Shield race because they're trying to optimize for MLS Cup. But because of that, they have a game in hand over Philly. They're tied on points. But like, I think I back Philly as the favorites for the Shield just because they don't have these questions.
Big question marks at center forward. I have a hard time seeing, other than personal preference, why you would play Bale over Rongo at center forward right now. And I thought it was a little interesting late in that game. I know Bale had a bunch of opportunities to score and wasn't able to get the ball over the line, but you knew Houston wasn't going to be expansive. They weren't going to push numbers forward. They weren't going to create space for Bale. Like, it was going to be the sort of thing where ball's going to fall to somebody in the box who's quickest to it, who's got the best instincts, who's in form, who's just going to put it in the back of the net. And, like, I'm betting on Arango every single time right now for that. So if I'm the LFC, I'd start him there. You still got to ease Bale in, but you don't know what the agreements eternally are with Gareth Bale. I mean, ultimately, he came to LA to prepare for a World Cup, so he's not going to be like, cool, I'll come off the bench the rest of the year. He needs to build game.
Nope.
He needs
That's
to build. No, hell no. He needs to build game fitness. But then it hasn't really worked with he and Vela on the
limited
field at
minutes
the same
to be
time.
Fair, but yeah, it's not looking good.
Yeah. All right, let's keep going here. Philadelphia Union 4.
Can we shout out? Sorry,
Atlanta
can we shout
1.
Out Kalen? And I want to say that it missed opportunity for content for the joy of the world that we didn't have a camera on Kalen Carr that whole time.
Well, technically, if you follow Susanna Collins on Instagram, you know that there was a camera on Kalen Carr that whole time. Basically, she was capturing all the autograph moments and everything else. Looked like they had a great time there in Houston, and so did the people. Union 4-1, man. They're 9-2 in their last 11, dating back to the 7-0 whooping of DC United in July. They've outscored their opponents 39-8. That's a plus 31 goal difference in 11 games. That's better than any other goal difference of any other team in the league over the course of the entire season. Their top three right now, the front three, Ura, Carranza, and Gazdag, of course, 41 goals, 22 assists on the season. They're just crushing people. Just destroying teams. just without regard for feelings or table position, or hopes and dreams. That's in your nightmares. Just, oh God, stop it.
Yeah.
Please, we're down.
They're duping people down.
We're covering our face. Like, you don't have to kick us there. Yeah, they're whooping people. We got a bunch of stuff on this. Klein, Daddy Kleinbucks hit us up and said, are you ready to accept that we're living in the Union World Order after the U15s destroyed Bayern Munich U15s 6-0? That's how deep we're going right now. I mean, even the U15s are winning 6-0.
Over Bayern.
It doesn't matter.
I'm not surprised. The youth at the Philadelphia Academy is legit. I mean, I got an opportunity to play for FC Delco when I was a kid. And I just remember being like, Eastern Pennsylvania, they develop players. Really, Philadelphia Union have gone above and beyond in developing players and giving them this rigorous education in how to become a professional. I mean, it's incredible what they're doing. And, I mean, I'm not surprised. Look at the academy products they just keep pushing and the talent and the competition that they put these kids in front of. I mean, it's incredible. So it's elite, and now you're seeing kind of what comes from pushing the youth and giving them an opportunity. So, yeah, duping it up.
And having a great first-team environment for them to integrate into once they get there. It's got to be really fun times for everybody involved with that Philly team, from the fans to the players, the front office, of course, Jim Curtin, et cetera. This is dominant stuff. Charlie, I don't want a long explanation. I just want your quick opinion. LAFC currently 57 points. Philadelphia, 57 points. LAFC do have a game in hand. Philly have better goal differential, so they'll have tiebreaker at the end of the year. Total number of wins is number one. LAFC have 18 wins to Philly's 16, so that's tough. And then goal differential comes after that. Who wins the Supporters Shield?
Right now, I'm going to go with Philadelphia Union. They win the Supporters Shield. I'm just looking at their schedule. I just don't see them losing. I don't see them losing a game.
At Red Bull would be a big one. Red Bull's fans hit us up after they went to Montreal this weekend and set a club record for points on the road in a season with a 1-0 win. Lewis Morgan with the goal on that one. Fabian C. hit us up and said, if the Red Bulls can also pull a result against the Union this week, does that make them an MLS Cup contender? Well, I guess we will see, Fabian. Go home where you haven't been so good at Red Bull Arena and pull one off against the Union. If the Union win that one, man, I have a hard time looking down the road and saying they won't win that shield. But we shall see. Only 5 games left for them. NYCFC at Red Bull Arena, losing 2-1 to DC United. Fighting Wayne Rooney's. Christian Benteke made his debut. Here's a quote from him just to give you some insight and context on how he's feeling. Christian said, I really wanted to choose something that made me happy, and I'm ready to take any consequences from that. He's speaking in terms of his place with Belgium. I wanted to do something that I would choose myself, what would make me happy when I wake up. So that's my whole decision. I didn't really think about anything else. From what I've seen, more open. There are more goals, he said, of MLS. So I think as a forward, that's what you're looking for.
He loves a secondary assist, too.
He's hungry. Oh, yeah. We have like 15 different texts and emails and Twitters, Charlie. Roddy Russell Jr., Luke, bunch of other people saying, how far will NYCFC fall? Is NYCFC free falling? Out of all the teams in the playoff hunt, which manager needs to qualify the most or is under the most pressure? Nick Cushing. I mean, I don't think they're not going to make the playoffs.
It's 10 points ahead
right
of
now.
Lot.
They are still in
no,
that.
They're going to make the playoffs.
In that
they're
home,
gonna
yeah,
make
they're
going to
make it. They're still in the home game designations right now, but Orlando are sort of breathing down
I'll
their neck.
I guarantee that.
Okay, we have a guarantee. Are they free falling though? And what do you make of Nick Cushing's place with the club? Now he is one in a long line of sort of City Football Group folks that have maybe had a little of a bumpy start and then corrected things. We're not at that part of the arc yet, but what do you think about this free fall?
It's concerning. I mean, let's be real. You lose Tati Castellanos, who is such a presence because. It's not just his goals, but his movement, his ability to bring other players into the game, into the attacking third, his hold-up play, the way he earns fouls for the team and gives you a breather. He's massive. And he's going over to La Liga and still playing. He doesn't look out of place. He looks like he's you're going to get another move.
He looks like Tati eventually. Is what he looks like.
Yeah. So I would say, yes, that's a big part of this. But at the same time, I don't think this team is playing anywhere near the way they were in terms of possession, in terms of the press. Just tactically, it looks off. And the weakest part of this group has been the defensive midfield. I know Keaton Parks has been out, and that's a big miss for them. But they don't have that balance in front of the back four. It just looks off. It's not. It hasn't been solid. And if the foundation's off, forget it. You can have those one-off plays when Tyus Magno or Pereira comes out or Santi Rodriguez, but it's not long-term success. And for me, this is where this group is not going to be set up to succeed if that defensive midfield position is not.
I'm going to sound like a Doyle parrot just because I know that he's been saying this for months and months, but it is true. They just don't get pressure to the ball. It's like they've completely changed how they want to do. Again, whether it's deliberate or what the thinking is behind it, they're just so easy to play against. And Charlie, like you said, the Keaton Parks injury is a massive one. Not replacing Tati, like the only external addition was Matias Pellegrini, who was a below average winger with Estudiantes over the last year, and he hasn't played in MLS since whatever 2021. Yeah,
below
like
average
again,
in MLS
not to take a pot
too.
Shot at him, but like
even when he was here,
I'm not like the when the Luis Suarez reports were coming around. Why didn't NYCFC just step up and say, all right, like we can make a DP spot open, and you know maybe I don't know exactly every in and out of the cap, but I believe that they could have made the room to sign him. You know, why didn't they pursue that harder? Like, why didn't they pursue another option harder? Like, I think that it was really short-sighted to let Tati Castellanos leave, and you only have Hebert as the only natural center forward on the roster. So I get if the thinking is maybe Tyus Magno can play there as well, and you get Pereira on the field a little bit easier. But I don't know. I think that's overthinking things, and this team is just way too easy to play through. DC United, prior to last weekend, hadn't scored in the month of August. They hadn't won. They were looking very listless. They don't really have anything to play for. They're at the bottom of the league. They're playing from, you know, Wayne Rooney's already said we need to make a ton of changes. So I think a lot of these players know that
Yeah, they're playing for jobs, is basically what they're playing.
So, like, that's all play playing for. This game against DC United is just, this is rock bottom. And, like, you look at the standings. For me, if they, anybody else above the playoff line, and even a couple teams below the playoff line, Cincy, New England, Toronto, I'd favor them against NYCFC in this current state. And this is a team that should have been in the Shield race when Ronnie Dial left.
Something to think about. I'm sure they're analyzing it at the club, but yeah, the form.
I'll tell you right form, now. Ronnie Dial was
one win in six, and at Chicago is that lone win. Losses at Columbus, at Miami, at Orlando. There have been a lot of away games. It's been heavy on away games. And Red Bull Arena. Good point. Good point. Solid.
Oh yeah, it's so bad to play there.
Yeah, it's a
it's not a perfect pitch.
Anyway, all right, a little bit of a quick one before we get to the USMNT stuff that we have in the show and these previews of the Greg Berhalter. I'm just going to put this to you guys. Michele Giannone, after Austin could not get any magic going late against the Timbers and lost at home 2-1, and RSL obviously beat Minnesota United 3-0, but it was a rotated Loon squad. Not a question, but a statement, says Michele. Minnesota is better than Austin. Go. Who you got? Minnesota or Austin in the playoffs? I'll make that additional addendum.
They just lost 3-0 and looked horrific, and they just lost Bekai Tabazi. Like, no, I'm not going that far. I'm still on Austin.
Okay. Yeah, the Tabazi one we haven't talked about, though. That is a huge sort of under the radar, not publicized enough loss for Minnesota United. It's a big question mark for them going forward. Part of me thinks in a playoff game, when things tighten up a little bit, that maybe Minnesota United might have an edge because Austin seems to thrive so much in that, like, hey, game's open.
Fair enough.
Yes, agreed.
So I think Minnesota might have an edge. But to me right now, they're sort of in a similar territory. And Austin's got to say, hey, we want a home game. But, I mean, if they get a home game, they cannot keep going down. They've got to find a way to address that side of their recent trends. Both great teams, though, in this league. Here's a quick hit result for you. New England 0, Chicago Fire 0. Georgie Petrovic is legit, but not much else is doing for the Revs, Charlie.
No.
Here's Matt in the Cream City, which we have learned and know now that is Milwaukee. Oh, my goodness, Shaqiri looked atrocious. He's been horrible. That dude gets paid a lot of money, and he had the captain's armband 2 games ago when Shehos was out. Absolutely unacceptable. He claims he came to Chicago to win. This team can't afford him taking plays off. It can't.
No, I mean, he came in.
They could have afforded him taking the penalty.
I think this was.
They could have afforded that.
I think this was sent. I want to say maybe. Yeah, I think it was after NYCFC.
Yeah, okay. Because I would say in this match, I give Ezra Hendrickson a ton of credit because they're missing a number of players. A lot of players are injured, playing players out of position. To come in with the tactical game plan and say, you know what, we're going to play John Duran, who is up top by himself on an island. One, this kid has so much potential. He's raw. He's still raw. But when he matures in front of goal, he is going to be a problem. He's a player that's destined for Europe if he continues to progress because he has all the tools. Now it's about sharpening those tools, giving him that ability, giving him service, and he will give any back line a problem because he's strong, good hold-up play. He makes good runs, finds himself in good spots. It's just he's a little raw. But in terms of setting this team up, just being a defensive team and trying to capitalize, they frustrated the Revolution. They could not be broken down. And the Revolution, they had opportunities, didn't take it. For me, you got to give them a ton of credit because at the end, Ezra Hendrickson said, I'm going to throw in some players, Shaqiri, to try and win this game. I felt like they could have nicked 3 points on the road against the Revs. So a ton of credit to Ezra Hendrickson and his staff for getting the best out of the Chicago Fire team that is not great. So let's be real. And for the Revs, probably couldn't be more disappointed with the past two matches, losing at home to the Galaxy and drawing against the Chicago Fire, who were basically hopeless in terms of being threatening, but still were able to threaten you. So with a team that's so predictable and you not being able to convert your chances – I mean, this, it's almost do or die for this next match against New York City FC at home.
All right, let's end with this little news. Looking ahead to the weekend as well, week 29. Daniel Shalvey signs a four-year deal with Sporting Kansas City. He re-ups. We had Ali Trost Martin on the Power Rankings show. I want to say maybe it was last week or the week before. I asked her directly, like, what's going to happen with Shalvey? She said, look, bet on him coming back, and that's the case. A long-term deal to keep him in Kansas City seems to make sense for both sides in this one, but that takes a big free agent off the board going forward. So Kansas City, make sure they hold on to him. Some other questions about them, but, yeah, big move for them. Looking ahead to the weekend, Saturday, you have an Univision game. Is Minnesota-Dallas? Probably they were saving Reynoso and Ludd and Amaria for that one. So that's two playoff teams, big six-pointers. They fight for a home game positioning. Out in the West, some MLS Live on that day, including Cincy-Charlotte. Cincy trying to bounce back. Nashville-Austin's a good one. New York-Philadelphia that day as well. Columbus trying to solidify their playoff case. On Sunday, Big Fox starts the day. Portland, Atlanta from Providence Park. So that was one to tune into, as is the Galaxy Kansas City on Unimas. And Charlie and I will be there at the end with MLS After Dark. So that should be really fun. All right. It is time. Anders, cue him up. He and I went to Chicago on Monday. It was a great time. As I said, we went to Soccer House, talked to Greg Berhalter for about an hour. That interview will come on Wednesday. But we have some interview teasers for you right now. And since it is deadline day, and all these moves are either happening or not happening. By the way, it looks like the Dest move to AC Milan definitely is happening. Here is Greg Berhalter on Dest's situation, now seemingly resolved, and Christian Pulisic at Chelsea.
There are sides of, you know, the pool right now that aren't as positive. And I think about Sergiño Dest at Barcelona and what that situation is with Xavi, and he would be a guy that you would, you know, if I'm looking at a U.S. 11 right now in the World Cup, I would say, okay, Sergiño Dest is in that 11.
Yeah.
You know, Christian Pulisic has gone through a lot at Chelsea, and it seems to be in a weird moment. Was he going to stay? Was he going to go? Rumors surrounding him. I start with Dest. Do you have any concern about the situation that Sergiño's in at Barcelona? I mean, we know playing time, being fit, being in form is crucial.
No, absolutely. And I've talked to Sergiño, and, you know, one thing I'd say about him is he's got a great mentality. He has a fighter's mentality, which you want him to have. And there's that side of it. And the other side of it is you want him to be realistic and say, okay, am I going to be able to get playing time here? And if he's not, you know, it is important that we have our players in form playing. And so I spoke to him about it. And it's not easy, man. You're at a big club. You live in a great city. There's great talent and training every single day. And it's hard to give up sometimes. It's really hard. You know, I'm almost uncomfortable having those conversations because this is the guy's career here.
It's his life, yeah.
Yeah, it's his life. And for me, it's like almost selfish to say, okay, you need to do this for this event in November, even though it's such a big event. But at the end of the day, you know, players are going to make their decisions, and their decisions will impact what happens in November.
What about Christian's side of it right now? I mean, it seems like he's kind of been in a similar situation before.
Yeah.
And you've talked before about him being a warrior, but he is like, he's the guy, like, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
He's very important.
No, he's massive for us. You know, I think, you know, I can't remember a game when he's played well, when we didn't play well. You know, he's like, when he plays well, we play well as a group. So he's huge for us. And, you know, for me, it's, you know, just his mentality, I think, is fantastic. You know, it's not easy. Whenever you're at one of these top clubs, right, it's always about, you know, the next player, right? These top clubs are always trying to bring the next guy in. And, you know, Christian's been in that environment for years now, and he's been surviving. And there's something to be said for that.
All right, so obviously that was before Sergiño Dest sealed his move to AC Milan, where it's not, you got to say, it's not exactly like there's a window for starting playing time just sitting there for the taking. I think the right back, Calabria, he's the captain of the team, no? Is that, so it's not exactly like, hey, just walk in, everything's good. We know Sergiño can play both sides, but what do you make of that move, Charlie, for Sergiño Dest and what Greg had to say?
Well, it's a difficult move because you're going to a club where the captain is the right back in the spot that you would play in. So you're not really going to play. And if you do play, it's probably in a right wing spot, and that's not going to help you for the national team because that's not where you're going to play. So I think, I guess any situation's better if you're going to play somewhat versus not at all if you were in Barcelona, and maybe he had that conversation with Xavi saying, hey, you're not going to play here at all, regardless of what you do. And I've been there before, so you need to move, because a little is better than nothing. But it's going to be a difficult situation. No matter where you go at that certain level, once you hit the elite level of clubs, it's difficult to find the right spot without competition, because all coaches want competition. So I guess in this case, you just have to support him and hope that he gets more playing time than expected.
Good news here, though. Good news. Good news for Dest, bad news for Alessandro Florenzi, who was signed this offseason, I believe, by Milan to play right back as well. He's got a long-term injury, which seems to be what has sort of what caused this signing on loan for a year with an option to buy for AC Milan. So that is that's the context around it. They have a crazy schedule, obviously. So, you know, Champions League, etc. There are going to be opportunities for Dest to get games. What do you think about that, Tom, as well as Christian Pulisic's situation at Chelsea?
Yeah, I think my favorite part of that answer from Berhalter, and it kind of speaks to where the culture of this group, of this organization, of this federation is that he's like, look, I almost feel selfish saying that, you know, for this tournament, it'd be better for you to move. Because, again, it's Dest's career. It's Pulisic's career. There are a lot of things that go into it, like whether like the national team is obviously hugely important to these guys. And again, Charlie, like you're much more your expertise is much more valuable here than mine as somebody who actually did this stuff and had these decisions to make. But I loved Berhalter saying, yeah, like it's his decision. It's his life. I want like there are so many factors that aren't just the national team. So like I feel selfish kind of framing in that direction. So I think that's pretty genuine. I think that's why the dual national recruitment has gone so well, because it's not viewed as recruitment. It's not viewed as what can you do for us. It's like, hey, we want you to make the best decision for you. And if that's aligned with us, that's great. And if not, hey, like we're not going to keep you and just to say that. And then just so Mexico can have you, just so the Netherlands can have you, just so Spain can have you, or whatever it is. So I don't know. I think that was the big takeaway for me, Charlie.
Yeah, you know, I guess these number nines have been writing some things down. They've been. Because we went from a point where, like, the number nine is like, nobody's in form. Who's in form? Like, nobody. It's Jesus. And now it feels like everybody's informed. And I know you and your staff on Mondays sit down and meet and go through after watching all these games and share reports. What are you saying about the number nines right now? And it has to be encouraging, at the very least, as a staff, to look at these performances and say, okay, well, this is a good trend.
Yeah, you want your players to be in form, right? And all you can do is hope that they're performing and then have to make difficult decisions, right? You don't want to make difficult decisions the other way when no one's performing, right? And you're picking the best of the worst. You want to pick the best of the best. And when you see Hagi scoring two goals, right? And Jordan, you know, his team doing really well. He had an assist again this weekend. He scored two goals already. Josh Sargent has scored three in two games. Jesus is having a great year. And Rico, you know, got on the field and started last game. You know, we'd like to have him score a little bit more. But it's a good problem to have. And then for us, it's about the profile, the player attributes that we need in our game model to be successful. And we pick that person that fits that the most.
What things are you looking for when you watch a game as it pertains to that game model? I mean, what you said about John Brooks made a lot of sense to me in terms of like, okay, well, we need him to do this, but we don't have sort of that immediate data to see how he in this moment of his career deals with it. What are you looking for in particular outside of like the obvious? We want to see goals. You want to see a striker in form that way.
Yeah, so for forwards, it's understanding first of all, if you go on the defensive side, how to build pressure, the understanding about how to make play predictable and then how to apply pressure on an opponent. And then, you know, sometimes winning the ball, but really making it difficult for the center backs that they're playing against from a defensive standpoint. Offensively, it's that those moments of when you have to come down to support buildup, right? But also how you're attacking space, how you're getting behind the back line. You know, what's your movement like? How, you know, are you recognizing? I don't know if you saw LA yesterday, LA Galaxy, but.
Watch the game, yep.
You know, a really interesting moment was when, you know, Galaxy wins the ball, is about to win the ball, and you see Chicharito just take off running into space. Mm-hmm. right? And you're like, this, he's making it from like 10 yards and he just keeps running and the ball goes to Ricky.
Yeah,
and first time ball and all of a sudden he's in on goal, right? Yeah. But it's that understanding of the game and what's going to happen in the game and then how do I exploit space? I think that was a great example from Chicharito of how he did that. So that's what we're looking for in players also. Do they understand, you know, how to attack space? And then in the penalty box, really important. You know, we know in the World Cup it's going to be really tight in the penalty box. So how are these guys, how are they maneuvering inside the penalty box? How are they creating space for themselves inside an area where there's lack of space is really important.
How many guys do you think it will be in September camp that are that sort of true nine? Like I have six guys on a list here that I think could get a look or might feel like they deserve a look.
Yeah, so let me name the six. See if I hope I can get them.
If I got it wrong, then I'm going to be ashamed.
If I can't get them all, I'm in trouble.
Well, so then I'm going to look dumb.
We have Jesus, yep. Ricardo, mm-hmm. Brandon,
mm-hmm.
P-Fock,
yep.
Sargent,
yep.
and Wright.
That's the six.
Yeah.
Do you think, are those guys going to be in September camp? Is that too
all
many?
Six of them? Yeah.
I don't know. That's not too
no,
many.
We're not bringing six strikers. Okay. No chance.
All right.
We have 180 minutes of game time.
Fair.
Yeah.
Does the training side of that, or is it too late for a Brandon Vasquez? Because the other guys you at least have experience with.
Yeah.
So I could, and with the group and understand sort of intimately or more intimately what you want to do.
Yeah.
How do you decide who doesn't make that cut?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's what we're working through right now. And listen, you know what's going to happen? There's going to be very difficult decisions that are made. There's going to be very disappointing guys. And the only thing I can say is that it's not the end.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember Steve Sampson called me and told me I was going to be an alternate for 1998 team. And I thought my whole world was ending. And then I end up in two more World Cups. Like it's not the end. And in this trip in particular, like it's about kind of who's there right now because you don't have time. There's not a month where you can get a guy fit and play three games and get him in form. That's not what it's about. So there's the two sides of it. There's going to be very difficult decisions. People are going to be disappointed. And just for them to understand that, you know, it's a decision based on this moment. It's not a decision that dictates who they are forever.
All right, so it ain't going to be six, Charlie. We are not going to see all six of those guys, which,
we aren't.
You know, as he laid out 180 minutes and – and if you're playing a single forward and training, how does that all work? The math just doesn't come together. That does mean some people are going to be disappointed. What did you take from what Greg had to say about that position and where it stands right now?
If I had to say, after that conversation, how many strikers I think he's going to take, I would say he's going to take four. And four is pushing it. But I'd say you're only playing with one. So six is not really ideal. But four, you could go one starting for one match, and you have that substitute. And for the other match, you go with one, and you have that substitute. So you're giving an opportunity for four strikers. In
four
my
halves.
Opinion, four halves, one striker per half, if that's the case. I'm going to go with Jesus Ferreira. And you have to think about the relationship and the understanding because – he made it pretty, I think, apparent to me that matters in this situation. So the four that if I had to go off the top of my head, who he's going to be giving a shot to, it's going to be Jesus Ferreira, Josh Sargent, Ricardo Pepi, and Jordy Pifolk. I think those are the four strikers at the moment that he's going to go with. He just saw Haji Wright, and he hasn't seen Brandon Vasquez and called him in, but I don't think he's ready to do that because it's so fresh.
You're coming, so I think you're coming back from sort of, you've had this, I mean, we've talked about it a ton. You've had this take that you think you will, that we will see him in September. This conversation with Greg, this quote, this soundbite convinced you that that's not going to be the case.
Yes.
And that he's saying, hey, this isn't the end. And he said that repeatedly. And that's a message to Brandon.
Yes. If I'm in his head, this is what I'm thinking after that conversation. Tell me I'm wrong.
I'm not telling you you're wrong. I think four feels like the maximum to me. And I think what he said about Haji after the last camp, I mean, despite the fact that he's scoring goals, I mean, you know, I think it's P-Fock to me, it's Jesus, and it's Pepi. I think Sargent should be there because I think he has sort of the best mix of all the skills wrapped into one. He just hasn't been able to show it at club level. But get those four guys in, and then, you know, it's a competition both in camp as well as in the rest of the season. You'll have a week, basically. Everybody will get the guitar for a week, and then you're running. There's no pre-camp, so this is it. Tom, any big takeaways here before we wrap the show?
I'm not going to tell either of you that you're wrong. I'm going to say that I hope that you're wrong. I really hope Brandon Vasquez is there.
Me too, man. Me too.
Ricardo Pepi hasn't scored a goal since October. He just went to a lower table team in the Netherlands, which is good for him to play, and I'm behind that move. But, like, I'm just not sure how you don't bring in Vasquez and give him a chance. Like, if the point of bringing Pepi in, despite form or whatever it is that you know what he offers, you know what he is, then why do you need to bring him in if you know that already? You haven't worked with Brandon Vasquez. Give him 45 minutes. Give him those days of training and see what he looks like in this environment. See what he looks like with all these national team players. Cincinnati is a very good team. It's a different system. Lucho Acosta is great. See what he looks like with Christian Pulisic, Gio Reyna, Weston McKennie, Yunus Musa in training. Like, I really, really hope that he's in there, and I think it would be really short-sighted if he's not.
Let me throw a scenario at you. Pepi, and we haven't talked about this, and we should have. Pepi was all that we talked about last summer, if you remember, and then also into the fall.
Well, I remember.
Yeah, Pepi made his loan move to Groningen. So he's going to be at Groningen. It seems like a good level for him. Greg has talked repeatedly about players finding the right level, not over jumping steps on the ladder. So what if it was Jesus, Brandon, Jordan, and Sargent, and Pepe's given an opportunity, though the camp is in Europe, so it's not like a big travel for him, to settle in more with his new club?
That's how you spin it. And that's how you spin it to Pepi as well. It's like, hey, man, I'm not leaving you behind because you're sixth choice. We want you to get settled into your club so you can hit the ground running and have a chance. Like, that's how you kind of manage that one. Again, I really hope that Vasquez is there.
I do think Pepe's going to the World Cup, though. So this move cemented it for me because I think Groningen is a fantastic club for him. I had teammates go to play at Groningen. I remember Marcus Berg, who was a Swedish international, went there and did really well. The Dutch league caters to strikers, and he's going to play. That's why you make that move. One, it's a team that is just on the outside of a top caliber elite club in the Eredivisie, but it's still a competitive club, a club that's better than the bottom half. So he's going to get opportunities. He's going to get time against, you know, top clubs. I think it couldn't be a better move for Ricardo Pepi. And now it's just like making sure you hit the ground running and being smooth and making the most of your opportunity. But I think with this move, it guarantees him a spot in the World Cup.
Oh, man, we will find out. And there's also about 55 more minutes of content and answers and interviews and questions for Greg coming out next Wednesday right here on the Extra Time feed as well as YouTube. You can also go watch on the MLS YouTube page our club and country shows. We're going to keep doing those watch-alongs for the U.S. and Canada during that September window for those friendlies, and then all the way through the World Cup as well. So stay tuned for that. Big thanks to Charlie on this day, as well as you, Mr. Tom Bogert. And congratulations once again to David and Megan, who are in our hearts and somehow made it into a significant part of this podcast as well, despite their absence. All right, we're out of here. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. We will see you on Tuesday. I said Tuesday with the U.S. Open Cup preview and a review of the weekend. Adios. We'll be right back.